This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Julian Ng and Sharitz Abdullah. 7:04 in the morning, Wednesday the 2nd of October, and in the US, stocks slid and treasuries rose after a gauge of US manufacturing posted the weakest reading since the end of the last recession.
Yeah, so this is fueling fears of the impending global slowdown as well as the boosting haven assets. So we saw the Dow plunge 1.28%, S&P 500 dropped 1.23%, and NASDAQ composite fell 1.13%. So at the same time, the Institute of Supply Management Factory Index slipped to 47.8 in September, the lowest since June 2009.
Over in Asia, the markets reacted pretty differently, most of them ending up in positive territory. Japan was up 0.6%, Singapore up 0.8%, South Korea Kospi was up almost 0.5%, and our local bonds, the KLCI, closed 0.33% higher. This is amid hopes that, there'll be better progress in the trade talks in the fourth quarter, although looking at some of the PMI numbers regionally as well, from South Korea, Japan, Indonesia, the PMI is pretty weak following trends in the United States.
But of course, the Asian markets closed before we saw that bloodbath in the US, so it's going to be interesting to see how they react later on this morning. But to give us some insight today into global markets, we have on the line with us Dodge Dorland, Chief Investment Officer at Lander Wealth Management in New York. Good morning, Dodge. Thank you for joining us. Now, stocks stayed in the green for the month of September, which has usually been a bad month for stocks. That said, markets fell overnight with banks leading the decline, followed by industrial companies. As we head into this October, do you foresee a repeat of last year's crash?
Well, I think our market is now going to be guilty until proven innocent. There is certain pressure to the downside, so it's going to have to prove that there's some positives coming into the environment for it to kind of regain some of its strength. So from that point of view, yes, we are going to see the same type of environment. But what's different is the volatility and the additional risks that are affecting our market. So one has to be very quick. There are going to be profitable opportunities both on the long and the short side, but one has to be very quick, nimble, not stay in for, like from a technical point of view, trying to get the full value. But once one has a profit and one sees some weakness in the bid and the offer, to take the profit. So from that point of view, which is a little bit different than last year, the volatility is going to rule.
And Dodge, the IPO landscape seems pretty interesting, what with the troubles at WeWork and also poor performances since the IPOs of Uber and Lyft. Do you think that this brings valuations to the fore, and does this color your view about opportunities in newly listed stocks?
Yes, yes, and yes. It does bring valuations to the fore, and it brings the perspective, the perception that valuations pre-IPO, pre-going public, have been overvalued. And then it creates additional pressure for these IPOs to produce. It's going to take time, so you have to wait for a month. There is some opportunities from a trading point of view, and this is what we're seeing. We're seeing some activity right when the IPO opens, and then near the close when the IPO, when those who are bringing the IPO out have to support it. But even when there's a huge reduction in the value below the IPO price, we do not see the investment banks really supporting it or the market supporting it. So from a very short-term point of view, we're seeing buying opportunities within the first half hour, and then fairly close to the end, we're seeing more shorting opportunities. But here in the United States, the SEC is in charge of the IPO regulation, and it does not allow IPOs to be the shares to be lent out for short sale for 40 days. On the other hand, institutional retail investors, whoever bought it, can lend out their shares during that time. So there is a shorting opportunity, but only for those who own the shares. And so the downside potential after the initial open is somewhat restricted and limited for the first 30 days. Overall, though, you can tell from my comments, we're really not buyers of these IPOs at this time. We want to see them prove themselves, and that usually takes 3 to 6 months.
So, Dodge, and in your view, what are some of the key buying opportunities in the U.S. equities right now in light of everything we've discussed so far?
Okay. Right now, somewhat longer term, utilities, those stocks that have a dividend yield and that are considered to be very conservative, Con Edison, a New York state utility, is one. But there are a whole bunch of utilities, and what we would be looking for are utilities or real estate investment trusts with a yield over 3%. On the short-term side, we are seeing some of the stocks that are under somewhat of selling pressure are going to be bouncing. Today, three out of the four major indices did break down below very key levels. The one that did not was the NASDAQ. So if NASDAQ can hold above 7880 tomorrow, we expect there to be a bounce. That bounce will be an opportunity to sell into the rallies, not to buy. In the meantime, stocks like Amazon, Netflix, Facebook are probably going to rally under those conditions. And so we see, and those are really very high volume, very trading oriented. So we expect to have trading opportunities on the long side, but only for a very brief period of time. For example, Facebook, if it falls below 174 spot 50, we see shorting coming in even more. So bearing all that in mind, one has to be quick, nimble, or very safe and go into the utilities and the REITs.
Thank you very much, Dodge. And that was Dodge Dolland, Chief Investment Officer at Lander Wealth Management in New York. And he mentioned utilities. So those particularly stocks with a high dividend yield, he mentioned specifically Con Edison, which is the New York state utility company, as well as REITs with the yields of over 3%.
I think the search for yields continue. In fact, that I read news that WeWork's junk bonds have hit about 12% in terms of yield. So if you're in the appetite for those kind of risk, 12% is what you get by buying into WeWork's junk bonds in the face of possible bankruptcy coming out of WeWork.
No risk, no return there. But also in some other international headlines this morning, an activist involved in the Hong Kong protest has been shot in the chest by police during a clash. Now, the incident came as thousands of people demonstrated in defiance of a protest ban for the 70th anniversary of communist rule in China. And although people have been shot by rubber bullets in previous protests, this is the first injury we've seen from a live round.
Yeah, so I mean, the man that was shot, he's 18 years old. He's been undergoing surgery, and his condition currently is not known. And police have said that he was hit somewhere near his left shoulder. So there is a video that is going online, a video of the shooting where a police officer opening fire, revolver. But at the same time, police have said that the officer, it was out of self-defense. Mm-hmm. It was because the police officer was attacked and opened fire because his life was seriously under threat.
Yes, because the man in question, the activist, who's 18 years old, by the way, he was swinging what appeared to be a metal pole in the videos as a group of protesters confronted riot police. So the policeman says that he acted in self-defense.
I think that this is a reflection of the degree of inequality that's happening around the world. And Hong Kong is a very iconic city that actually reflects that. You can really see the divide that as seen in the very expensive property prices over there. And this is the most literal version of inequality that you can see. People really buying in spirit, buying into the idea of the protests. Huge amounts of people are coming out. In fact, it's a great chunk of Hong Kong's population. So one can say that the people are feeling it, right? And therefore, they are doing it. It's a very sad situation, actually, but it really highlights that we have to address this situation through mm-hmm. policy. The idea of inequality, we have to address that situation in whatever policy that we make.
Yeah, whenever protests carry on for this long and reach this kind of scale, it means that it's tapped into a much wider vein of dissatisfaction and unhappiness in the populace. Otherwise, it wouldn't have this staying power. And yes, it started with this extradition bill. And yes, I think it has expanded to address China's involvement in Hong Kong's governance. But at the end of the day, some analysts are saying that one of the main reasons for this is just cost of living. It's just the fact that a lot of Hong Kong's youth are feeling increasingly marginalized and sidelined by the government. That's playing into that dissatisfaction and lending stamina to the protests. But turning our attention also to Japan this morning, Japan has increased its consumption tax for the first time in 5 years, bringing the long-delayed policy into effect, despite concerns that this could knock the economy. Now, yesterday, Japan raised its sales tax rate from 8% 5% to 10%, and it applies to nearly all goods and services, although most food items will be exempt.
Yeah, so this tax that is going to be introduced is planned to create additional revenue to fund social welfare programs in Japan, including preschool education, as well as pay down its huge public debt load. As we know, Japan is facing a very, facing a strain in their budget, especially with the growing aging population over there. But at the same time, it's just looking at the timing. I know that it may backfire to them, but they do have the World Cup rugby happening at the moment. And at the same time, there's going to be an Olympic in Japan. So whether or not it's also taking advantage of that.
Yeah, I think the reluctance in the past to impose this tax was because of the hit on economy. And now with those world events that you mentioned, Sherrod, perhaps that would take a little bit of the bite off the negative effects on the economy. But certainly, they are imposing the tax on almost everything, on almost all the consumption goods, and this will sort of beef up the coffers of the government. I think we also see headlines in Malaysia that the MIER is asking the government to reconsider its decision of scrapping the GST and bring back the GST.
And actually, we do have a poll running on this morning on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio. We're asking you, considering Malaysia's fiscal situation today, should the goods and services tax be reintroduced? Do let us know what you think. But in terms of Japan, one of the other big, drags that the government is taking into consideration is the slowdown in China, as well as the trade war with the US. And speaking of trade, the World Trade Organization has simultaneously slashed its forecast for trade growth this year by more than half, warning that the slowdown could hit living standards as well as jobs. Now, the WTO has said that it expects trade volumes to grow by just 1.2% in 2019, down from the 2.6% it predicted in April.
And it was also blamed that the downgrade on slower growth in major economy trade war is because of trade wars as well as ongoing uncertainty over Brexit. So first half 2019, world merchandises, we saw that increase 0.6%. There's also high degree of uncertainty when it comes to expansion of world trade volume, which could slow down to about 0.5%. And at the same time, 1.2% rise would mark the lowest rate in a decade.
I'm not sure if the World Bank is a leading indicator. I think they're just reacting to whatever's that's happening in the world. I mean, we have the ISMs and the PMIs. And all this alphabet soup that are leading indicators saying that our economies around the world are slowing down, and therefore the WTO is reacting to that. I think one thing that can arrest this, I mean, people are talking about QEs around the world, right? EU, and perhaps even the US is going to revitalize the QE program. But one QE that can be done is now an emerging idea is QE for the people, right? Instead of QEs, like money going through the banking system, the government should have a policy where it credits the money directly into your bank accounts. Helicopter money, that's a policy that is becoming more and more viable by the day, seeing what's happening in Hong Kong and in Jakarta and in protests that happened in Jakarta a few weeks ago.
Well, I certainly wouldn't say no if an extra $1,000 or so maybe wound up in my bank account, just in case anyone might be listening to this. But right now we are heading into a few messages. And then after that, we'll be back to take a look at some local stories for you. So be sure to stay tuned here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.